Well, today I'm in New Orleans. It's my first visit, and I knew I was coming to a distinctive US city. Whilst many American towns can be a bit samey, there are a handful which look and feel special, like San Francisco or New York, and New Orleans is clearly in that category. As you walk around the city's streets, the music sounds different, the food smells different, and the place looks like nowhere else in America. The tourist board's Christian Sonia puts New Orleans' distinct identity down to the influence of people who've settled here over the years.
The look of it goes back to its early beginnings. Lots of Spanish architecture is what you see mostly. Lots of French architecture is still evident. But people like lounging areas. People like porches and shade and fans, shady oak trees. There's a different vibe here, and it's a slowed down pace. And I think you feel it immediately as soon as you get to town.
It's worth riding the streetcars down the tree-lined boulevards which lead out to the suburbs. I'd recommend a stroll around the Garden District. It's filled with 19th century mansions built in a southern style. Many of the properties are palatial with grand columns at the front, and you can admire their beautiful gardens from the pavements too. Just watch where you walk at night. Tree roots have forced up the sidewalks, and a stroll can turn into an assault course. You'll find a great shopping and dining area with local businesses rather than chains set along Magazine Street in this area. I like the sign in Joey K's restaurant, "Sorry, we're open." In another slightly more studenty area, Oak Street, Jacquemus's Bar's outdoor sign proclaims warm beer, lousy food and poor service. This city clearly has a self-deprecating sense of humour, and I quite like that. If you're out after sunset, there's a special atmosphere created by the Spanish moss, which creeps down from tree branches like big cobwebs. And many homes have carriage lamps and lanterns outside, which cast light from a real flame.
I think gaslight adds a certain kind of quality to the night air that electric lights don't. You'll see most gaslight in the French Quarter. In a lot of homes.
You can see why the combination of low flickering light and old buildings makes the city seem a little spooky. You can go on a vampire walk here, for instance. That's their version of a ghost walk.
Vampires. Tennessee Williams lived here for a long time. So did William Faulkner. So a lot of those guys were in the French Quarter in the 20s, and the French Quarter was very bohemian then.
And as the city's built on swamplands, they can't dig graves. So cemeteries bury the dead above ground in stone crypts and mausoleums, which rise above the graveyards. There's a chilling touch of Scooby-Doo mysteries about them. And then there's the voodoo thing. In the touristy central French Quarter, there's a voodoo shop. It's filled with jokey and plasticky items. Some people take the practice, which was actually introduced by Haitian settlers, very seriously.
There are rituals that take place on Bayou St. John, right behind us where I live. We're a superstitious lot.
So when you say people practice voodoo, if you have an argument with somebody in your office, they're not going to get a doll out, are they? Start sticking pins in it.
I've not seen that, but you can buy dolls in the French Quarter, and you can buy gris-gris bags with charms that are supposed to do certain things for you or others. But there are some voodoo priestesses here who are quite popular, and they can advise you on incantations to speak to get what you want.
And there's a certain tombstone that people visit to pay homage to.
Marie Laveau, who's probably New Orleans' most well-known voodoo priestess. She was a real person, and she's buried in St. Louis Cemetery. Her grave is visited like Jim Morrison's grave is visited in Paris. You'll see markings on the graves leading you to her site.
Many people from many different parts of the world have come through New Orleans, and many have settled here. We have not only French culture, but Spanish and German and Italian. A very large Sicilian influence here.
Former Spanish street names from the period of their rule are marked in tiles in the side of some buildings in the French Quarter, ironically. And you'll also see the fleur-de-lis emblem all over the city. That marks the French connection, if the place names don't give you enough of a clue. Brian Huff was my tour guide. He works with NewOrleansStreetWalkers.com.
1682, a French explorer, you may recall, from a history class, a guy named LaSalle stood there and claimed all the land drained by that mighty river in the name of Louis XIV of France, which is why we are called Louisiana.
I was staying in the central business district, which is really convenient, but a tad bland. So I hopped on a ferry for a 10-minute ride across the mighty Mississippi's murky brown waters. As the boat pulled away from the shore and crossed the wide river, there was a good view of the city's high-rise skyline and the twin cantilever bridges that carry the interstate into town. As you rise, there's music from the steam-driven pipe organ on the paddle steamer Natchez. They offer river cruises. Much of New Orleans is very old for America. I disembarked at Algiers Point, the second oldest district, established in 1719. It's the only part of the city on the western bank of the river. The steamboat music was replaced by the sound of a woodpecker busily bashing his beak against a telegraph pole. Algiers Point is mainly residential. It's filled with colourful wooden homes, some with porches, and many predating the American War of Independence. A vintage Gulf petrol station has been preserved. There's an English pub, strangely, too. Curiously, the front entrance to the Crown and Anchor is fashioned like an old British police phone box. It did seem bigger inside. The place is like a TARDIS.
There are lots of really neat little neighborhoods, and they're all unique, and people who live in them are fiercely proud of them. I really like the Bywater and Marigny areas. Those two areas are really changing right now. They're old parts of the city, but new citizens are moving in and creating a new vibe.
Across the water, I checked out a hip and up-and-coming suburb, Bywater. I was initially unsure if I was heading in the right direction. A run-down old industrial area separates this district from downtown. I wouldn't walk it at night. In daylight, though, you can appreciate the brightly painted buildings, street art featuring grinning skeletons, and the iron-balconied Regency townhouses. Strings of plastic beads were strung from trees like spaghetti. That's a remnant of Mardi Gras partying. Nothing defines a city more than its food. There are regional specialities in corners of the state. I've travelled the US extensively, though, and I've never found anywhere with such a strong food offer and such unique cuisine as New Orleans. I loved everything, the blackened seasoning and the heat and spice in the food, which is often really creamy, too.
Cajun food is essentially if it walks, crawls, flies, or swims, if I could kill it and put it in one pot and cook it and eat it. Yeah.
Hello there, hi.
Good,
thank you.
Good, I'm getting a little room here. I do have some water.
Thank you.
Is there anything else I can get you right now?
Frank Brigston is well known around New Orleans. He's on television regularly. Frank's been at the forefront of revitalizing traditional Creole cooking methods. And he has a beautiful restaurant that his family runs in a Victorian cottage in the River Bend area of the city, a leafy suburb popular with the university staff.
Cajun food, which is the food of the Acadian people, which are French people from Canada who settled in South Louisiana, and it's a very humble approach to food. It's driven by French technique and then local ingredients. But Creole cuisine, on the other hand, is the cuisine of and culture of the city of New Orleans, which is not just French, but multicultural, and that's the difference.
Frank says gumbo is the definitive New Orleans dish.
You know, the word gumbo comes from an African word for okra. It's like people talk about gumbo like they talk about football teams. They will argue. Mine's better than yours, you know, and no, you can't do it that way. It's got to be this way. That discussion is never ending, and it just goes to show our passion. Is it a soup? No. Is it a stew? No. But to me, it's more of an event. If you found some fresh okra, some fresh shrimp, some oysters, whatever it is you put in your gumbo, you don't say come over for some gumbo, you say come over for a gumbo.
What has to be in the gumbo?
The dark brown roux, which is, you know, oil and flour, a very French technique. To me, that's essential.
It can be a celebration of a deep sense of New Orleans identity.
We were evacuated for Katrina. We were gone to North Louisiana for a few months. And the thing I missed the most was filet gumbo. So when we were finally able to be home, so I came to the restaurant, which was still closed, and I grabbed my gumbo pot. Because you got to have your favorite pot. So I got my pot and the ingredients, and I asked my wife to call all the employees that we could find. And that was the best gumbo ever in my life because it brought us home and it reaffirmed us that this is our place.
You can enjoy tasty food even if you're buying cheap eats in New Orleans. Frank recommended sampling a po' boy.
Po' boy is our sandwich, and it's made on New Orleans French bread, which is different from a baguette. Our French bread is very light and airy with a very thin crust. It could be simple as ham and Swiss cheese or roast beef and gravy or seafood, fried shrimp, fried oyster po' boys. That's our go-to thing for lunch.
The French have also influenced fast food, deep-fried snacks. Café du Monde was established in 1862.
It's very famous for their beignets. They call it like a French donut, but it's basically fried dough with sugar. And it's open 24 hours.
Now, New Orleans is, of course, one of the world's great music cities. And it's also played a key role in cocktails. More as our trip continues next. This is the Great Destinations Radio Show, and today I'm in New Orleans. It's a green city, and in summer there's a lot of parkland for your picnic. The 1,300-acre city park is stunning. It's filled with live oak trees twisting and contorting, some of them older than 600 years old. They appear to be dripping in Spanish moss. There's a botanic garden here as well, and a lake in which I spotted terrapins of various sizes. There's mini railway rides too around the park. I was surprised to see and hear a bigger train pass through downtown. The railroad runs along the riverbank. And you could find yourself waiting a long time at level crossings.
Sometimes I'm sitting here and it's 20 minutes.
Of course, New Orleans made international headlines following the devastation caused by Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Almost 1,500 people died, four-fifths of the city flooded when the dikes or levees were overtopped or inundated. Some parts of town were under 15 feet of water. The central oldest part, the French Quarter, was thankfully unaffected. As I stood alongside the Mississippi, Brian explained to me why the city was so vulnerable.
The highest point above sea level in the entire city is over there, 14 feet, right at the edge of the river. Not the entire city is below sea level, but much of it is. And of course, that's when the Hurricane Katrina hit, when the levees broke. All the water filled in to sea level.
When I was in Algiers Point, I thought it strange seeing a ship pass along the top of the grass embankment, the levee. It was higher than the street level. New Orleans has a happier association with music.
Jazz was born in New Orleans.
Locals are proud of the legend Louis Armstrong. The airport's named after him. A city centre park's been dedicated to Satchmo, and his name adorns the arch over the entrance, and his statue greets you outside the ferry port in Algier Point. Paul Scott is the general manager of the Hilton Riverside.
If you go down and visit Louis Armstrong Way, for example, where he grew up over here by the Superdome, it was then called Backo Town, back of town. There's the Little Gem Saloon where he got his start and where he practiced the cornet.
Around the French Quarter of the city center, you'll hear music around every corner.
You're going to see nonstop music, whether you're passing a club, where you randomly see someone performing in a coffee shop, to the street musicians. And the street musicians can be between a rapper and a violinist to, you know, young men tapping, dancing behind a brass band. It's kind of inescapable, and I think it's what's so exciting about New Orleans because it goes hand in hand. It's almost like you pass so many restaurants, but you're passing so much music as well.
Philip Moore is a concierge at the city's Hilton Riverside Hotel and has become an expert on nightlife options.
First night, you gotta go to Bourbon Street. I mean, that's just world-renowned. You know, even if you're there for 5 minutes or 5 hours or till 5 in the morning.
Bourbon Street is party town, and you need to see it. How long you can last there depends on your stamina. It's wall-to-wall bars, full of pub crawlers and stag and hen-dos. It was a bit too loud for me.
Now, the next night, I'll take them to where the locals go, which is Frenchman Street, you know, and that's where they have about 13 music clubs in a three-block radius. You can get jazz, rock and roll, calypso, reggae. This is more like a live music city.
So I asked Robin Barnes, one of the city's most loved singers, where she'd recommend for live music. She suggested an area near to Bourbon Street, a bit more relaxed, an area dotted with antique shops, jewelry stores, and art galleries.
One of my favorite places to hear live music, street music, is Royal Street. Closer to Canal Street, the four blocks going in, you're always going to see someone on every corner, which is magical, if you will.
Robin has a number of qualities of well-known performers.
I have the strength of Ella Fitzgerald, the vocal diversity of Mariah Carey, the stage presence of Bruno Mars, and the soul depth of Adele.
Wow.
How about that?
Robin is much in demand as a performer, and I went to see her Saturday night live jazz at the Windsor Court Polo Club Lounge. It's quite a grand venue, with plush furnishings and comfortable leather seats.
Much the underlying beat of the entire city. I mean, from the originators of jazz, you know, to the influences throughout the years. New Orleans has such a diversity of music now. We have brass band music, which could be traditional jazz music, to soul music, to funk. You know, it's one of those things where if you come and you listen to anyone in New Orleans, you're gonna leave moved with some kind of excitement, some kind of feeling, some kind of passion.
Now, you're never far from a bar in New Orleans.
I'm a member of a gym across the quarter called the New Orleans Athletic Club. My gym is founded in the year 1872, and in my gym I have a full bar.
See what I mean? New Orleans has its own signature cocktail, and I met with cocktail expert Paul Twenneman at the cocktail bar Cure. It's on the city's Ferret Street in the suburbs, in an area that was a bit run down and dodgy until a few years ago.
The proprietors of this place came in after Hurricane Katrina and really created what I always consider to be New Orleans' first destination cocktail bar.
Paul gave me the New Orleans' distinctive bright red cocktail, the Sazerac. It's the color of iron brew. It includes cognac. Also in it, sugar and absinthe, and there's a floral botanical drink created in the 18th century by a guy who moved to the city after living in Haiti.
Haitia's bitters is a key element of the drink. If you look back in time, you know, there weren't cocktail bars, there really weren't bars. You know, there were apothecaries where people would, who weren't feeling very well, they may have had a cold or a cough, or they just didn't wake up on the right side of the bed, and they'd go visit their local chemist who would make them something. And so this was, the Sazerac was one of Antoine Peychaud's frequent remedies.
If you really want to let your hair down, book your room and flights now for the biggest party in the USA, New Orleans Mardi Gras.
It's the greatest free show on earth. You don't have to pay anyone to see this spectacle. You just show up with your supplies, which usually involve an ice chest full of something cold to drink. It's a citywide celebration, the likes of which you will never see. And then that all leads up to Ash Wednesday, which is the day that Lent begins.
The church calendar dictates the date of the annual festival. In fact, religious events are marked more prominently here. I noticed an Algiers Point cafe was offering Lent lunch specials.
What most people don't realize about Mardi Gras is it actually starts on January 6th. That's when the season starts. We call it carnival season. Mardi Gras is the day. That's Fat Tuesday. It fluctuates with the date of Easter. It's about 2 weeks of parades leading up to Mardi Gras, which is the culmination of the season. And this city hosts about 1 million people in that time span. There are only 400,000 people in New Orleans, so you can imagine that's quite a lot of company in town. But what you can expect to see is a citywide, family-friendly celebration. Parades, these floats range from 30 feet to 300 feet, and they're the pageantry and ornate decorations of the floats in the parades are unlike anything else you'll ever see. For each parade, both sides of the street are lined with thousands of people asking the riders in the floats to throw them things. Throw me something, mister, is what they say. And the riders will throw plastic beads or stuffed animals or frisbees, anything.
British Airways recently launched a direct 10-hour flight from London to New Orleans. and that makes visiting this amazing city so much easier.
The UK represents our biggest international market right now. We hope to hear more British accents on the street.
New Orleans has a thumbprint on what the world needs, and everyone needs to experience that at least once. But they'll be back.
And Robin, you're right, and I will. You can find out more about New Orleans at neworleansonline.com. I was kindly accommodated at the perfectly positioned Hilton New Orleans Riverside. You can book at hilton.com.
The Great Destinations Radio Show.